Richard are both physicians in orthopedics. The Crowlers live in Cleveland. Natalie wiped her eyes with a new tissue. After it happened and the police weren't getting anywhere, I went to the college and tried to resurrect Delilah's life. I found out she had a boyfriend, Cameron Snow. Decker was leafing through a summary folder on Delilah Oakham's disappearance. I see that Emily was interviewed, but not the boyfriend. Is Snow spelled S-N-O-W? S-N-O-W-E. I didn't like him at all. I think he had something to do with their disappearance, and when I told the police, they said they'd check him out. Whether or not they did, I don't know. Oh, here we go. I'm looking in the wrong place. Snow was interviewed along with several other young men. The kids alibied one another. He read the file. It doesn't say anything about him being a boyfriend.
He probably denied it. And friends lie, you know.
Friends lie all the time. Was he at the same party as Delilah the night she disappeared?
Yes. It was a Morse McKinley party, and he went to Morse McKinley. I heard that the two of them had a fight, and she stalked off. She left, but supposedly he didn't. Who's to say he didn't sneak out and follow her and do something nasty to her?
Is that what you believe happened? She sighed.
I'm just saying it's plausible. But once he was alibied, the police took him off the list.
She leaned forward and crumpled, deflating like slack sails in a becalmed sea.
Do you think it's Delilah in the woods?
I don't know. But if it is her, I will do whatever I humanly can do to bring down whoever is responsible. Decker paused. When nothing happened with the police, did you try your luck with a private investigator?
I see you've talked to parents like me before.
She blew out air.
We hired two private investigators. The first one only cared about money, Daniel Brewer. The second one was more responsive, but equally unsuccessful. Her name is Ashley Corrigan. I have both sets of files and reports. Would you like me to retrieve them for you?
That would be very helpful. Thank you very much.
When she left, McAdams raised his eyebrows. He whispered, How did you do this stuff for so long? It's so fucking draining.
Most of the time, the people turn up in one piece. Often, they're runaway teens or children kidnapped in custody disputes. Missing person cases have a fair amount of successes. What we're working with are basically homicides, but without bodies. And yes, they are fucking draining. Natalie returned, holding several manila envelopes.
The files are here. She handed him a third envelope. These are her x-rays. I'd like everything back if it isn't her.
Absolutely.
I suppose I should thank you for taking the time to come out.
Of course. We'll keep you updated, Mrs. Oakham.
At this point, I don't expect anything from you or anyone else.
Decker stood and placed a hand on her shoulder. I'm so sorry for all you've gone through. I promise you this. Even if it isn't Delilah, I'll take another look at her file. It's been 3 years. Sometimes a fresh perspective helps. She looked him squarely in the eye.
I'll keep you to your word.
Decker took a card from his wallet. My office number, and I'll write my cell number on the back. When he was done, he handed it to her. Call me anytime.
That's what they all say.
He means it, McAdams said. She turned to him.
Do you have a card?
He's full-time in law school, Decker said. I'm your contact man, and I'm sincere. I was a detective lieutenant in the Los Angeles Police Department. I've worked a lot of cases. I can't promise you anything, but I'll do my best.
What will you do that hasn't been done?
Yes, it's all been done. But sometimes, by rereading the files, there's a lead that we missed first time around. Sometimes the guilty party has been questioned, and the name is right there in black and white.
So why the hell didn't they get the person in the first place? because files are thick and have a lot of extraneous information. It's not that we're incompetent, although sometimes we are. But it's like a data processing thing, sorting all the junk from the useful information. If you didn't like Cameron Snow, he's worth another look. Mothers have good instincts. For some odd reason, I believe you're taking me seriously. I am taking you seriously. Too much to hope for. She shook her head. It's okay. Whatever. Spoken like a woman who had given up on life. Heading southeast toward Philadelphia, Decker drove while munching on a breakfast bar, listening to a Jane Monheit CD that Rena had bought him. After walking around all day, she was worn out and had fallen asleep 10 minutes into the ride, her head resting against the car door. The sky was black and cloudless. The night was mild, not nearly as hot and muggy as the evenings had been just a week ago. They still had a few hours driving left before they reached the city of brotherly love. McAdams had closed his eyes. He said, "Who listens to CDs anymore?" Decker startled at the sound of his voice. He had thought that the kid had fallen asleep. "Obviously, I do." "What you need is an auxiliary feed on your media system. Then you can listen to everything you like on your phone instead of listening to the same 12 tracks over and over and over. I don't like to fool around with music while I'm driving. That's the problem these days. Everybody is on the phone or texting or fiddling with music or setting navigation. Or eating." Decker ignored the jibe. "They're doing everything except paying attention to the road." "Spoken like a true codger." "Nonsense," Decker said. "I'm very au courant. I've got Pandora at home, FYI. "I like that, FYI. If you'd like me to drive, I will do so. I can actually multitask." "No such thing. Your brain isn't doing two things at once. It's constantly shifting from one task to another in microseconds, which means you're not really giving anything your full attention. No wonder all you youngsters have ADD. You're just jealous because it takes you forever to switch gears." "I do prefer a symphony to a jingle. Besides, what is wrong with hearing 12 songs by Jane Monheit?" "I'm not commenting on your taste, just your delivery system." "Okay, McAdams, I can see you're bored. Tell me your thoughts on the case." "This is what I'm thinking." He sat up and cleared his throat. "Even if Jane Doe isn't Delilah or Yvette, we still can't rule out that Pettigrew and Jane Doe are connected. But if Doe is Delilah or Yvette, they have the added college connection." Decker said, "Both Yvette and Delilah were murdered 2 years apart from Pettigrew. Was there any overlap in school with Pettigrew and the girls?"
"There's probably no overlap with the two girls. But it's possible that Pettigrew overlapped with both of them.
That would put at least two of them in the same time frame." "Yvette vanished first," McAdams said. "Maybe Pettigrew knew something about her disappearance. Maybe that was the real reason why Pettigrew dropped out of school." "If so, why would he come back to Greenbury a few years later?"
"To confront the murderer." "Pettigrew was a different person from the one who had left school. Maybe after finding his true self, he finally felt the need to do the right thing."
"Then why not just go to the police?" Decker said.
"Maybe he wasn't sure. Maybe he wanted to feel the situation out."
"If Pettigrew came back to talk to the killer, who'd come out with the short end of the stick in that one-on-one?"
"Maybe Pettigrew felt he could handle himself. He was a tall guy.
Maybe he didn't think whoever he confronted would dare to kill again," Decker said. If he thought that, he was not only naive, he never watched a true crime show in his life. McAdams gave a half smile.
"If Jane Doe is Oakham, then you'd have to reverse it since Pettigrew disappeared first."
"That Oakham saw Pettigrew being murdered?"
"Exactly. Then why wouldn't the killer murder Occam and Pettigrew at the same time? Maybe the killer didn't know Occam had witnessed the murder until much later, Decker said. And Occam, after witnessing a murder, would stick around in school a full year and a half after it happened and act like it was nothing? The car went silent. Then McAdams said, maybe she was part of it. Occam had a part in Pettigrew's murder. He was hit from behind by someone smaller. Okay, I'm open to anything. Let's find out if Occam was even in the colleges when Pettigrew disappeared, or if they knew someone in common. That's more likely, Decker said. The kid punched a button on the sound system, and the CD popped out. That's the third time we went through the disc. Enough. Put on whatever music you like, or not. I don't mind the silence. No one talked for a few moments. Suddenly McAdams announced, we spend a summer bored shitless, and just when we start to deal with something interesting, I've got to leave. You can come down on the weekends. My sublease is up in a week, McAdams brightened. I could stay with you, just until you get a solve, which won't take long with your expertise and competence. Thanks for the compliment. Silence. Then more silence. Of course, if it would be an imposition for me to stay with you, I could rent something. Why don't we see what plays out in the week you're here? Sure, McAdams looked glum. Decker tapped the steering wheel. And if I'm floundering with the case, and that looks likely, I will be happy to have your help and your input. And of course you can stay with us. But I don't get it. Tyler, you're a very rich young man. Why don't you just rent a place here for the year? The price is like pocket change for you. My own place would mean stocking my own fridge, doing my own laundry, and cleaning my own floors. If I stay with you, I get free room and board. So you're a mooch. I bring you flowers and wine for dinner. You're a classy mooch. Decker, you're the one that always says that I'm one of your honorary kids. You are. If I'm an honorary kid, then I, like your other kids, should have mooching privileges. Decker laughed. That's fine with me, Harvard, just as long as I don't have to pay your tuition. Chapter 13. Rittenhour Square was a lively neighborhood near downtown Philly. The area overflowed with people and apartment buildings, restaurants, cafes, boutiques, and clubs, all within walking distance from the city's elite universities. In the daytime, traffic was bad. At night, the roadways were wall-to-wall cars, most of them looking for non-existent parking spaces. Kobe could walk to work, but Cindy wasn't as lucky. She regularly battled traffic, but at least parking wasn't the problem. Her building came with a space, and she had left it open for Decker's car. He, Rena, and Tyler arrived just as the sitter was putting the boys in pajamas. Nana and Grandpa's appearance was a cause for celebration and the delaying of bedtime. The boys were tall and strong and talked over each other. When things started getting wild, the sitter announced that it was 10 minutes until lights out. If they cooperated, Nana and Grandpa would read them 2 books and tuck them in. Just as the door closed to the boys' room, Kobe came home. Decker's son-in-law was tall and lean, made even leaner by the demanding hours of medical school coupled with his advanced middle age. He was dressed in scrubs. After he excused the sitter, he said, I'll just go kiss them goodnight. Cindy arrived 5 minutes later via cab. She left her car at the station house so parking wouldn't be a problem for Decker. She was also tall and had lost the kind of weight that comes with fatigue rather than exercise. She looked the professional in black slacks, a white blouse, and black blazer with black flats on her feet. She had crossed the threshold into her 40s and was beginning to show signs of wear and tear. white in her red hair and wrinkles around her bright brown eyes, which instantly lit up when she saw her father. Gigantic hugs ensued.
"Oh my God, it's great to see you guys."
"Same here." Decker regarded his daughter at arm's length. "Detective Sergeant Coutiel. I don't know if I like you outranking me."
"In name only."
She kissed his cheek and gave Rena a hug, then McAdams.
"Hello, Tyler. Is he still picking on you?"
"Yes."
"Well, better you than me. Are the boys asleep?"
Rena said.
"Kobe's with them right now."
Cindy checked her watch.
"They're still up?"
"I think we're to blame for that."
"Can't fault them for being excited. I'll just be a minute. Dinner's ready, by the way. I just have to heat everything up."
"I can do it," Rena said. "I'll set the table as well."
"Great. It's the shredded beef and vegetables. There's also a baguette in the freezer. Just stick it in the oven with the meat and open a bottle of wine. We're celebrating."
Cindy retreated to the boys' bedroom. Decker and Tyler sat on a brown corduroy couch, the color not quite masking the multiple stains. Decker said, "What I should do is help Rena out, but what I want to do is just sit here. My conscience and my aching bones are embroiled in this internal debate." Rena came into the dining area with a stack of dishes.
"What debate?"
"Should I help you or not?"
"This is the deal. First of all, I slept on the ride here. Second, I'm already standing, so I'll do the work. When you get up, your goose is cooked."
"So as long as I sit, I'm exempt?"
"Yes. How was your day?"
"Long," Decker said. "Most of it was driving." "Why does driving make you so tired? It's not as if you're exerting any energy."
"Being bored is tiring," Rena said. "Did you learn anything about Delilah Oakham?"
Cindy and Kobe emerged from the boys' room. She said,
"Yeah, I want to hear about that."
Rena said, "Why don't you two shower, and by then everything will be ready."
"I'd love to, but don't start without me."
Kobe said, "Are you sure you don't want help, Rena?"
"I'm fine."
The couple retreated to their bedroom. Tyler stood up and stretched.
"I need to be upright. What do you need, Rena?"
"You're making me look bad," Decker said.
"You don't need me for that."
"Whoa," Rena said. "Snap." Decker laughed but didn't move. With Tyler setting the table and Rena in the kitchen, he was irrelevant anyway. McAdams came back to the couch with two old-fashioned glasses of whiskey. He plunked one down in front of Peter.
"At Rena's behest. You don't deserve her."
"It's impossible to compete with an angel, so I don't even try." Decker kicked off his shoes and put his socked feet up on an ottoman. Then he picked up the glass of booze and this morning's unread Inquirer and put on his reading glasses. Old age did have its compensations. The household started early, to be expected with a med student, a cop, and two young boys. It was therefore convenient that Decker's own work day also started at dawn. Radar was on the phone.
"We got a situation up here. We found another body."
It shouldn't have been a shock, but it was. Maybe because Decker was still in his pajamas.
"When?"
"We found a depression in the ground right before sunset. The bones were discovered about 20 minutes ago. Ben Reuters and Kevin Butterfield are up there now. Coroner should be here in an hour."
"What x-rays do you have?"
"I have Delilah Oakham's, and I'm talking to Serena Jones in about 5 hours. Her daughter is Yvette Jones."
"She has her daughter's x-rays?"
"I don't know if she has them at 6:30 in the morning, but she did say she'll give them to me when we speak."
"When's the appointment?"
11.
"Can you bump it up?"
"I'll call her at 8 and see if she can meet as soon as possible. In the meantime, I'll start packing up. I don't suppose you know anything about the bones."
"Not yet. As soon as we knew we found a body, we stopped to wait for the coroner. If you're back by noon, we should know more."
We need to expand the search area, Mike. At least another a half mile out in all directions.
Agreed, Radar answered. I'm putting up posts for volunteers over the internet and in the local paper. We've got a lot of retirees who've helped us out before. We should have a cadaver dog by this afternoon.
What a PR nightmare. You want to handle it?
Ask Karen to do it. She's pretty slick.
Okay, I'll keep you updated.
Radar cut the line. Decker stood, put on a robe, and shuffled into the kitchen. Rena had already showered and was helping Cindy with breakfast for the boys. She took one look at him and escorted him into the living room away from young ears.
Bad news?
Another body. She brought her hand to her mouth.
Good heavens!
3 cold cases with very little forensic evidence. I come to Greenbury for semi-retirement, and I'm saddled with a serial killer. Cindy walked out, drying her hand on a dish towel.
Another set of bones?
Yes, Decker said. Cindy said,
how extensive is your missing persons list?
I'm winnowing it down.
If you need a bigger data bank, I'm here for you.
I might take you up on the offer. Decker kissed her forehead. Thank you, sweetheart. They heard one of the twins scream out,
Mommy!
My exit line. Cindy went back into the kitchen. To Rena, Decker said, we've extended the search area. At this rate, the whole area will be dug up by Halloween. Talk about ghosts, more like zombies rising from the graves.
I can't think of a more competent detective to have on a case of this magnitude.
Thank you for the endorsement, he smiled. I'd better wake up McAdams. At best, he's not a morning person. I'm hardly awake myself. I really need coffee.
There's a fresh pot in the kitchen, as well as your grandson's. It's time to put on your game face and greet your loved ones.
Decker was already smiling.
How are they?
Go in and find out.
Dr. Michael and Serena Jones lived in a plush, upscale neighborhood a few blocks away from the old Barnes Museum.
Decker and Rena had visited the world-class art collection years ago on their historic vacation through Boston and Philadelphia. The collection was now housed in the culture corridor of downtown Philadelphia. What was lost was the charm of seeing the paintings in a mansion in Lower Merion, where the houses were roomy and cushy and the acreage was green and sylvan. The Joneses' address put the two detectives in front of a sizable brick house with a pitched roof on a lot with mature trees. Around the house and up the stone walkway were multi-hued mums, a blast of color and texture throughout the yard. Decker picked up a brass knocker in the shape of a lion's head and gently rapped it against a polished walnut door. The woman who answered appeared to be in her 60s, with brown eyes set in a round face and framed by blonde bouffant hair. Her makeup was expertly applied. Rosy cheeks, rosy lips, and matching rose nails. She was average height and carried a few extra pounds around her middle. She wore a white sleeveless blouse, her wrists sparkling with jeweled bangles, and cuffed denim jeans. Flesh-colored studded sandals highlighted rose-painted toenails. She led them into a front parlor that held a love seat and 2 chairs upholstered in chintz. A baby grand was tucked into the corner. Muted light was streaming through the front mullioned window.
"Please have a seat," she said. "My husband would have been here, but he got called out on an emergency."
Decker sat down on a chair, and McAdams took the love seat.
What kind of a doctor is he?
Psychiatrist. Most of his patients are in facilities and are medicated, but when one goes haywire, it affects the entire place.
A brief smile.
Coffee? Tea?
Unfortunately, we're in a big rush. We have to leave for Greenbury as soon as possible.
Oh?
A beat.
Dare I ask why?
Decker raised an eyebrow. You know that we've been scouring a wooded area around the 5 colleges of upstate.
Of course.
Where you found bones, Serena said.
Yes. Our department, in their search of the area, found another set of remains.
The woman didn't speak.
We could really use those dental x-rays, Mrs. Jones.
Serena wiped a tear from her eye before it could smudge her mascara.
I'll get them for you right now.
Thank you.
It didn't take more than a minute before she handed him an envelope with the films inside. He said,
I would like to ask you a few questions, though, before we head off.
Certainly.
She hesitated but sat down in the unused matching chair. She waited for Decker to speak. The school, Morse McKinley, has the particulars of your daughter's disappearance. So does the police station. I'm traveling with a very abbreviated file. Could you tell me what you know about your daughter's disappearance?
Serena spoke quietly.
The last time anyone saw Yvette was around 8 in the evening. She had attended a lecture and never made it back to her dorm.
Do you know if she was walking alone back to her room?
No, I have no idea where she went, and no one claimed to see her after the lecture.
But you know how it is. No one wants to get involved.
That is a problem. By any chance, did you hire a private detective?
After the police failed, yes.
Do you have anything from him or her that might be useful to me?
I have a file.
I'd like to take it with me so I can read it carefully. Would you mind?
As long as I get it back.
I'll copy it and send it back, I promise.
It might take me a few minutes to dig it up. I have so many notes and files.
Could I have your entire files? She stared at him.
It's a lot of notes.
The more I know, the better.
You actually intend to do something?
To the best of my ability. And even if the remains are not a match to your daughter, I'll reopen the case and do my best to figure out what happened.
Tears welled up in her eyes. I'm going to remember your words, Detective.
That's fine. Briefly, could you tell me a little bit about Yvette? What would you like her legacy to be?
Wow.
She looked down.
Yvette. She was a good girl. Strong-willed, opinionated, outspoken. She was always advocating for the underdog. She was very idealistic.
Lots of kids go through that stage,
McAdams said. You thought it was a stage?
How do I put this so I don't sound judgmental?
Serena sighed.
At the time of her disappearance, I felt she was very confused.
In what way? Decker asked.
In every way. What she wanted to be. Who she wanted to be. She came home at Christmas during her freshman year and announced she was gay. Then she came home for spring break and announced she had a boyfriend.
Who?
She didn't say. He must have been short-lived, because when she came home after her first year, she told us she was dropping out to join an ashram in India.
We quickly disabused her of that idea.
By the time she went back to Morse McKinley in her sophomore year, she had forgotten about it. But sometime later, she called me and decided she was bisexual, although she didn't want to be labeled. Gender was a concept, not a reality, she announced. I thought she was nuts. Either you're male or female, regardless of whom you have sex with.
Sounds like she gave you a run for your money, McAdams said.
If there was some kind of issue to be had, she would have it.
She gritted her teeth. Even in memory, the girl had gotten a rise out of her.
She didn't call me that often, so I didn't think anything of it when she hadn't called in 3-4 days. It wasn't until we got a phone call that we realized something was wrong.
Did you suspect anyone at the colleges? Decker asked.
So far as I know, everyone was cleared, but someone must have known what happened. You just don't disappear off the face of the earth and no one knows anything.
Decker nodded, although sometimes that was exactly what happened. The disappearance was 7 years ago. Everyone had graduated or moved on.
Thank you very much, Mrs. Jones. I was hoping I could speak to you at greater length, but I really need to get back.
That's fine. Thank you for coming out personally.
Of course. Could you get me your daughter's files?
Oh, right. Hold on. It'll take me a minute.
After she left the room, McAdams whispered,
"Noticing a pattern? Disaffected kids with strained relationships with their parents?"
"Makes them vulnerable," Decker was thinking out loud. "More susceptible to bad people. Especially charming psychopaths."
"Yeah.
College kids have underdeveloped radars for danger."
"That wasn't me," McAdams smiled. "I was always a suspicious guy. Traits that make you steer clear of bad people, but don't do much for making you popular."
"Yeah, you pretty much steer clear of everyone."
"I have an almost girlfriend. Malin adores me."
"Malin is 3,000 miles away.
Hence the qualifier, almost."
Serena came back into the room carrying a box.
"There's a lot of material in here."
"I'll take good care of it." Decker relieved her of the files. "Even if we haven't found your daughter, I'll still take a look at the case. Fresh pair of eyes."
"Well, the bar certainly wasn't set very high by your police department," she sighed. "I'm sorry if I offended you. I know you're trying to help."
"You're angry at the lack of progress. I'd be angry, too."
A tear leaked from her eye. "I waver between grief and anger."
She looked up.
"You want to know the truth? I also have a tremendous amount of guilt, not because of what happened. There was nothing I could have done to prevent what happened. I wasn't there."
A pause.
"Yvette caused a lot of drama. With her gone, it's so quiet, and sometimes that's a relief."
She wiped her wet eyes.
"Do you think I'm terrible?"
"Not at all. I know you loved your daughter. What you've gone through, what you're still going through, is completely overwhelming, and you're certainly entitled to your emotions."
"That's nice of you to say."
She took a Kleenex and wiped her eyes.
"It would really help if I knew something, and it would be nice if I could bury my little girl."
"I promise I'll do my best."
Decker stood up with the file box and the envelope with the x-rays. He handed her his card.
"Feel free to call me anytime."
"Thank you."
She escorted them to the door and managed a smile when she said goodbye. On the way to the car, Decker handed McAdams the box and the envelope. "When we get back, take the dental x-rays over to the pathologist and see if we get a match. After you do that, get me a list of sex offenders in the Greenbury area. If we are working with a serial killer, he might have done something lesser and worked his way up to murder."
"Right away, boss."
"Also, call up Karen at the station house and see if she can talk to the friend of Delilah Oakham."
"Emily Crowler."
"Yeah, her. If she's still in Clarion, tell Karen to go by and have a chat. I'll talk to the boyfriend, Cameron Snow."
"Who may not be a boyfriend."
"Right," McAdams said. "Do you think they will have unearthed the remains?"
"Hope so. We've got about 3 hours of travel time. After you've taken in the x-rays, start going through the material we have on Delilah and Yvette. See if you can tell me what was or wasn't done."
"You may be stepping on toes. Radar was here when these girls went missing."
"Let me worry about the bruised egos. You just organize the files."
They got to the car. Decker took the driver's seat. McAdams sat shotgun.
"I'll move to the back when we get Rena."
"That's right, I have to pick up Rena."
"You forgot about your wife?"
Decker smiled. "I would have remembered eventually."
"I'll let her know that."
When Decker threw him a sneer, McAdams said,
"Just kidding."
He rubbed his hands together.
Their murders happened years apart, Delilah and Yvette. And then there's Pettigrew. What do you think? They were killed by someone they all knew, or they were murdered by someone living in the area that chose them randomly?
Decker thought a moment. Same burial ground, so it's the same killer. And he didn't kill all of them at the same time. Yvette and Delilah are too far apart. Were there any other university students who went missing?
Not from the five colleges, unless you want me to go back more than 20 years.
Do you have a list that goes back 20 years of people who went missing?
In the trunk of the car.
Decker thought a moment. What about that girl who went missing 4 years ago? Didn't she work in Greenberry?
I think she worked in Meridian. I've got the details in my backpack, along with the names of other missing girls that we haven't looked at. It's all in the trunk of the car.
Decker pulled the car over to a street curb. Go get the list.
Yes, sir.
McAdams got out, rummaged in the trunk for the list, came back, and closed the car door. They took off.
The girl worked in Greenbury at a convenience store that bordered Meridian, the Circle M Mart.
The one right off the highway.
Correct. She disappeared about 4 years ago, Erin Young, and she wasn't a girl. She was 30.
Okay. Who else should I be looking at?
12 years ago, Margot Marino. She went to Hamilton Community College. She was 19 when she disappeared. 13 years ago, Jacqueline Ungaro. She vanished from Pace in the middle of her sophomore year.
Pace?
It's a tiny liberal arts college about 40 miles southwest of Greenbury. The next college student I have after Jacqueline was... This was 17 years ago. Rhonda Burns. She grew up about 50 miles north of Greenbury. She went missing from SUNY Purchase. How far back do you want to go, boss?
Couldn't tell you right now, Harvard. It depends on how many bodies we find. Chapter 14. They started out at 1 p.m. for the 3-hour drive back to Greenbury. Ordinarily, because it was Friday, they would have spent the weekend with Cindy, Kobe, and the boys. That meant Rena hadn't prepared for the Sabbath. But there was food in the freezer, and with any luck, she'd be able to warm it up and set a nice table before it was time to light candles. Peter seemed to sense her thoughts. Decker said,
"We're making good time. We should be there at least a couple of hours before sunset."
"I'm fine. Worst comes to worst, I'll open up a can of tuna and a bag of potato chips, and we can all pretend we're in grade school again."
"I, for one, like canned tuna," McAdam said. "It's one of those much maligned food products that's actually pretty good."
"Simplicity is your middle name," Decker said.
"Someone is grumpy."
"Someone is right here, and yes, I'm a little preoccupied. 3 sets of bones and counting. Of course I'm upset."
"And to think that Bogat Trail used to be one of my favorite walking spots."
Rena took out a can of soda water.
"It's so violating. I don't think I'll feel safe on any trail for a while."
"Get a dog," McAdam said.
"Talk to the boss," Rena said. "I've been trying for a year, and he has yet to budge."
Decker said, "Are you really keen about getting up in 0-degree weather for a walk?"
"And to that I answer, we can always lay down a patch of sod in the sunroom."
"No, we're not going to do that. It smells after a while."
"We can change it out," Rena answered.
"Where do you get sod in the dead of winter on the East Coast?"
"You import it from places that grow sod. It's not a hard thing. And, by the way, I spoke to the insulation guy. He can do the entire job, including adding a freestanding radiator and new double-hung windows for about $10,000. I think it's worth it, sod or no sod."
"Probably," Decker concurred. "But no sod."
"Spoil sport."
"I thought you didn't want any more pets."
"Sometimes a gal gets lonely."
"I'm home most of the time by 5, and you work. What are we going to do with the dog while you're working?"
McAdam said.
Greenbury Police Department is pet-friendly. Karen brings her poodle to work all the time.
You're not helping.
Yes, I am. It's just that I'm on her side.
If you don't want a dog, Peter, we won't get a dog, Rena said.
Decker didn't answer right away. Then he said, Okay, Rena, what kind of a dog?
I thought we decided that if we'd ever get a dog, we'd get a Bouvier. It's non-allergenic, for one thing. It's also a great guard dog and great for walking trails.
What about the grandchildren? You really think Rachel will be okay with bringing Lily up to visit when we have a huge dog?
They're not huge and are known for their intelligence. Besides, we mostly go visit them.
And the few times they come up here, like on Thanksgiving?
I'll take the dog, McAdams said.
You live in Boston.
So send the dog up with Uber. Just give me a few days' notice.
Last year you came down here for Thanksgiving, Decker reminded him.
Peter, if you don't want a dog, I understand, Rena said. There are two people in this marriage, I get it. But please stop manufacturing problems.
Fine, Decker made a big show of sighing. We'll get a dog. But it'll be your dog. I don't want anything to do with him.
Her, I want a girl dog.
Rena turned to McAdams.
We had a dog when we first got married, an Irish setter named Ginger. Dumb as a brick, but we loved her. It knocked him out for 6 months after she died.
Basket case, Decker admitted. I cried like a baby. I can't go through that again.
He's a sensitive soul deep down.
Rena patted his back.
What can I say, darling? Love hurts.
2 hours and 26 minutes later, Decker pulled the car into the driveway. McAdams sat in the car, waiting to be dropped off at the station house, while Rena dashed into the house, turned on the oven, and put a frozen cooked chicken sitting on a bed of frozen rice pilaf into the heat. She'd make a salad later. As Decker walked in, Rena said,
Can you turn on the lights in the living room while I set up candles?
Sure. I'll also turn down the bed.
You're a doll.
Rena adjusted the temperature so the oven was on low. It would take at least an hour to thaw everything out, but she wasn't in a hurry. She took out two frozen challahs. Thank God for modern refrigeration. Out loud, she said,
I'll wait to eat until you come back.
Decker came out of the bedroom and looked at his watch. I'll do a turnaround as soon as I can. They don't need me for the dig, but I'd like to stick around and see if we get a match with Delilah Oakham or Yvette Jones. I want to give the parents updates as soon as I get them.
Of course, she kissed his cheek. Hurry home.
I'll probably have McAdams with me.
What else is new? There's plenty of food once it's defrosted.
I'll direct him elsewhere if you want to be alone.
It's okay, Peter. I know you two will have a lot to discuss.
I don't have to burden you with that.
It's no burden. I'm actually interested.
I was the one who found the first grave, remember? She checked her watch.
Go. See you later.
And you're sure you don't mind having Tyler?
Not at all. He's like a grandchild. A lot of fun, a lot of work, and you can send him home at the end of the day.
At 10, the pair arrived at the house, and they, along with Rena, ate a hot but rather joyless Shabbat dinner. The meal was short, and everyone retired early, including Tyler, who chose to sleep over rather than take the extra 5 minutes needed to drive to his apartment and sleep in his own bed. He went home the next morning when Decker and Rena went to synagogue, but he was back again at 1 for lunch. He wore a brown polo under a light tan sweater and black cords with loafers on his feet. The mornings were beginning to cool down, but still lacked the nip of fall.
I don't have anything to eat in my fridge. I'm clearing out food because I'm leaving in a week. Besides, I thought the boss might need me.
Need you for what? Decker was sitting on the couch reading the morning newspaper, his rimless reading glasses perched midway on his nose.
He looked up. Is there something new going on?
Nothing new at Bogat, if that's what you're asking. I made you a copy of the list.
What list?
Sex offenders in the area?
Oh, that's right. Anything?
Nothing that smacks me in the face.
I'll go over it again more carefully.
I'll get someone to help you.
Decker went back to his newspaper. He had changed from a jacket and slacks to sweats and had slippers on his feet. Rena served a plate of nuts and dried fruit.
Have a nosh. I'll be back in a jiff.
What's for lunch? McAdams asked.
We're having dairy. Lox, smoked trout, whitefish, cream cheese and bagels, deviled eggs, and fruit salad. As a matter of fact, Tyler, while I change, you can cut up tomatoes, cucumbers, and onions and organize everything on a servable plate.
Why him and not me? Decker asked.
Because he knows my kitchen better than you do.
Decker looked up. Was I just maligned?
No, dear.
Rena patted his shoulder.
Just saving you some KP.
Decker threw his head back and sighed. Rena said,
Was that a tired sigh or a discouraged sigh?
Sometimes they're one and the same. He smiled. Just been having a few long days after a very quiet summer. Go get comfortable.
By the time she came back down, the entire table had been set.
Rena had on a loose denim jumper that fell mid-calf over a white long-sleeved T-shirt. Her hair was tucked into a white beret. Decker made the blessing over the wine, and then they ritually washed their hands and broke bread. Rena passed around the fish plate.
I love this kind of stuff. Although my parents were Hungarian, my mother's family was originally Russian stock.
Actually, the Ukraine, if you want to be specific, Decker said. Although the way Putin is going, that is Russia.
Odessa,
Rena said.
You tell Russians that you're originally from Odessa, and they say, oh, you must be Jewish. I heard it's a lovely beach city.
Don't know, McAdams said. Never been there. But I do like caviar.
Which reminds me.
Rena got up and brought back a small jar of salmon roe.
It's even got kosher certification. I like it on my deviled eggs.
Lay it on me, girl, Tyler said. Decker had already finished half of his lox sandwich when the phone rang. All three of them looked up. McAdams stood. I'll get it. Radar's voice came over the speakerphone. We've got a match for the second set of bones. Yvette Jones.
It's Tyler, Captain. Do you want us to come down to the dig site?
No need. We're in the process of cleaning the skull of body number three. Do you know if it's male or female? Decker said out loud.
Small skull, probably female. We'll know better once we send it all to be X-rayed.
Decker said. I'll notify the Joneses. I don't think Mrs. Jones will be surprised, but that doesn't mean she'll be okay with it. I'll tell her we're officially working on the case again.
Sure, Radar said. What's the link here, Pete? The school? The other missing people? Did she and Pettigrew know each other?
All good questions. Tyler has a list of local sex offenders who have registered.
And?
Just did a preliminary check. Some are still here, others are gone. No one matched for murder. Were you here in Greenbury, Mike, when Yvette initially went missing?
I came about 6 months after. I was here when Oakham went missing. I never heard about Pettigrew, which makes sense because no one knew he disappeared in Greenbury. Don't be nervous if you step on some toes.
I'll try to be nice about it. Just let me know if you discover any new graves.
We're still digging around with the dog. Anyone else missing from around here?
No one from the five colleges. McAdams broke in and told him about the local cashier at the gas station mart, Erin Young. As far as we could tell, she had nothing to do with Pettigrew or the colleges.
A one-off? Radar asked.
A one-off of what? Decker asked. I suppose that's the question on all our minds. Radar hung up.
The captain certainly isn't proprietary. McAdams sat back down and took a deviled egg.
Decker said,
After lunch, could you pull everything we have on Yvette Jones and bring it from the station to my house?
Sure. I might as well pull Delilah Oakham and Erin Young while I'm at it.
McAdams helped himself to a generous dollop of salmon roe.
You still have the Pettigrew files, right?
Right.
Find anything?
I read them, but I didn't know what I was looking for. I still don't. But with Jones being identified, we can see if the two of them had anything in common, besides being troublemakers.
They were troublemakers? Rena asked.
Yvette's mother described her as confused, McAdams said. She was constantly trying out different identities.
Who isn't confused at that age? Even kids who look like they have it together are often searching for something.
Maybe that's what Pettigrew and Yvette had in common, McAdams said.
They were both searching for something with the wrong people.
What would constitute the wrong crowd at the colleges? Rena said.
Everyone is experimenting with different identities. Almost all have been passed out drunk at one time or another. Probably a large percentage light up as well.
Risky behavior is more accepted than being well-behaved.
Which brings up a point, Decker said. You get into all sorts of problems when you're drunk or loaded. Did these students have a rep for regularly taking drugs or drinking?
McAdams said.
According to Pettigrew's doctor, Lawrence had a very alternative lifestyle.
He didn't exactly say that, Decker said. But let's find out if the three of them had things in common, including bad habits. We need to concentrate on friends, faculty, fields of study, college clubs, favorite bars and restaurants, athletic teams, anything that would put them in contact with one another.
Decker gave out another large sigh.
I've got to make a notification call to Yvette's parents. I'll do it in the library.
Are you done eating? Rena asked.
Save my sandwich in the fridge. I'm sure I'll want it later.
Will you be in the mood for dessert?
Yeah, sure. I'm fine. He left the table.
McAdams said, Greenbury is utter boredom all summer, and then we're digging up bodies faster than we can process them.
It's scary, Tyler. Whoever put the bodies near Bogat stopped burying people when the hiking trail went in. But that doesn't mean the killer stopped killing.
There's another graveyard somewhere?
It's a possibility.
Yes, it is.
I'd look, except I have to leave for Boston. God, that pisses me off.
I'm sure you'll be needed for input even when you're back up north.
Nice of you to say.
On a more mundane subject, I have some pecan bars that you made a while back. I also have some chocolate chip cookies. They're probably defrosted by now.
You know, coffee goes real good with pecan bars and chocolate chip cookies.
It's Shabbos, Tyler. I can't make coffee. But there's nothing stopping me from picking up a to-go container from one of the local shops.
It's up to you.
I'll stop by the station house and pick up the files. I'll be back in about an hour.
Decker came out 10 minutes later, his hair disheveled. Whenever he talked on the phone about something upsetting, he mussed his hair.
Where's the kid?
He went to pick up the files and a to-go container of coffee.
You asked him for coffee?
I didn't ask him for anything. He just said he's picking up coffee. We'll wait until he gets back for dessert.
What's for dessert?
Pecan bars and chocolate chip cookies.
Coffee does go well with that.
For the more diet-conscious, I also have some grapes.
I think I could use a shot of sugar. Decker checked his watch. When's he coming back?
He said about an hour.
What do we do in the meantime?
Rena smiled. If you have to ask, I'm not going to tell you.
Just trying to be a sensitive guy.
Don't bother.
Rena took his hand.
Sensitivity is for chumps.
Along with the coffee, McAdams brought in several loads of boxes, which he plopped on the dining room table. Rena brought out paper coffee cups and a plate of the cookies and pecan bars.
Decker passed out a stack of post-its. To Rena, he said, "Would you mind reading Pettigrew's file? I'll take Oakham and McAdams will take Jones."
"Happy to help. What do you want me to sticker?"
"Sticker names and anything else that catches your interest. When we're all done, we'll make a list and McAdams will write them down."
They worked in silence for hours until the sun set and the stars began to peek out of a twilight sky. When it was dark, Rena got up and prepared for Havdalah, taking out a beeswax-braided candle, a container of spices, and a cup of wine, things necessary for the ritual blessing that ended Shabbat and welcomed the new week. Traditionally, the words in the prayer delineated the sacred from the profane, but in this case, the entire afternoon had been devoted to profound depravity. Nonetheless, the blessing was made, and then the three of them went back to reading and marking the files. Usually, Decker put off any kind of unnecessary work until Shabbat was over. But until the murderer was known and behind bars, every second that passed presented an opportunity to kill. And with all the activity going on in Bogart Trail, if the murderer was still around, he had to know it was only a matter of time before the police would start full-scale hunting. They were already at a disadvantage. The devil never slept. That gave Satan a 7-hour head start each and every day.
Chapter 15. By 10 o'clock that evening, they had multiple lists. People who showed up in just one file, names appearing in 2 out of the 3 files, and individuals who intersected all 3, consisting of town employees, college professors, and college administrators who were around from Jones to Oakham, a 4-year span. It was harder to weave Erin Young into the mix. She disappeared between Pettigrew and Oakham, and she didn't seem to have much in common with the students. It was plausible that all 4 had shopped at the same markets and frequented the same cafes or restaurants. But since Decker couldn't find anything definitive, he put her file aside until he could figure out a way for her to fit in.
"We'll work the cases individually as well as together," Decker told McAdams. "I know you have school in a week. Unless something falls in our laps, we're not going to solve anything by then. Do what you can, and I'll give your files to Kevin or Ben."
"Sure. Where do you want to start?"
"We'll start by interviewing the names that intersect all 3 victims. Delilah Oakham is the most recent gone girl. There may be some people in Clarion who remember her and her disappearance. But we don't know if she's part of the Boneyard," McAdams said.
"Don't you want to wait until the remains are identified?"
"Even if she isn't there, I promised her family I'd take a look at the case. I need to talk to Ben Reuters, who was the original investigator on the case. Then I want to talk to the boyfriend, Cameron Snow. The mother didn't like him."
"Do parents ever like boyfriends?" Rena asked.
"Probably not. But boyfriends with missing girlfriends are especially interesting. Tyler, find out if Snow is still in school, and if he is, set up an appointment with him for tomorrow."
"Which college did he attend?"
"Morse McKinley. Did you call Delilah's best friend Emily Crowler?"
"You said to have Karen do it."
"Yeah, I did say that. I'll call Karen then."
He turned to his wife.
"Rena, could you do me a favor? It's busy work."
"What do you need?"
"Make some calls. Find out how many of those intersected names are still associated with the college and who has moved out of town. It would give Tyler and me a starting point."
"I can tell you right now that Hank Carter made the Pettigrew list. Lawrence took one of his classes. And we know Yvette Jones was last seen attending one of his lectures. He's still in town."
"Yvette also took one of Carter's classes," McAdams said. "He made Oakham's list as well. He's definitely worth checking out." Decker stood up from the dining room table.
I'm going to give Ben Reuters a call and let him know what I'm doing. See if he can fill in some of my blanks since Oakham was his case to begin with. Geez, 3 dead bodies and counting.
Peter, if you need me, I'm here, McAdam said. I can always take a leave of absence.
Not necessary, but thanks for the offer.
It's no biggie. People go in and out of law school all the time.
Taking a leave of absence from law school would make your dad very unhappy.
Yes, I know. It's what makes the idea all the more appealing.
The station house had ceased running the air conditioning since the 1st of September, a cost-cutting measure. That meant that the interview room the next day was warm, bordering on uncomfortable. Okay for Decker as he watched Cameron Snow squirm on the other side of the one-way mirror. The space was taken up by 4 chairs and a table with a pitcher of water and paper cups. The kid was over 6 feet, high-waisted with long legs and good-sized shoulders. He had sandy hair and amber eyes and a strong chin. Tan-complexioned, he resembled a lion. He wore a gray T-shirt over loose jeans and high tops. It was Sunday afternoon at 1 p.m. Reuters came into the room first. Snow had talked to Reuters before, but he was still clearly uncomfortable. He wiped sweat off his forehead. A moment later, Decker and McAdams introduced themselves, and that made 3 against 1. Even the kid remarked on it.
I thought you worked in pairs.
When no one responded, he said,
whatever.
It had taken all morning to track the kid down, and once he finally did call back, he wasn't happy about coming down to the station house. Decker said,
been in a fight?
Huh? The kid looked confused. You've got bruising on your face, Decker said. A cut on your forehead. Snow waved it away.
Just some horsing around that got a little rowdy.
More than rowdy. You look like you walked into a pole.
I fell face down on the floor. So what?
No need to get defensive. Reuters wore a white short-sleeved shirt that showed off hard muscle.
Been a hard couple of days for you, Cameron?
It's been a hard couple of years. I should have been done with college by now. I took a year off after it happened.
Why's that? Decker asked.
Why do you think? Everyone was looking at me like I did something, even though I clearly did not. I was with about 6 other guys that night. I don't even know why I'm here.
You've been following the local news at all, Cameron? Reuters said.
The body's at Bogat Trail. He looked down.
So you found her. God, it's gonna happen all over again.
What is? McAdam said.
Everyone's suspecting me of something.
He shook his head.
Shit, I knew I shouldn't have come back here.
Why did you?
Credits. I didn't want to start all over again someplace else. Especially because I didn't do anything. I don't even know why I'm here.
Second time he said that. Decker looked at the boy. We're giving the Oakham case another hard look. You're here because you were involved with the victim. That shouldn't surprise you.
But I didn't do anything.
No one said you did. We're just asking questions, and we're asking for help. Maybe you can help us.
I don't know how. I've told you everything I know.
Snow was looking at Reuters, who said nothing. The kid drummed his fingers on the tabletop.
I bet if I squeeze in a couple more econ classes in this term, I can graduate a semester early. I just can't go through all that shit again.
Reuters said.
You want to go through that night again for Detective Decker? It was over 3 years ago. I've tried to blank it from my mind. Jesus.
He exhaled.
God, I didn't have anything to do with it. How many times do I have to say it?
Decker said. What was she like?
What?
Cameron lowered his voice.
You mean